KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, another film from Sundance. This one, a documentary by the filmmaker Penny Lane about Satanists. It's a political movement. You could say it's a religious movement. They don't actually worship Satan. They don't believe in a Satan. Just the idea that he was the ultimate rebel. It's called Hail Satan? With a question mark. We'll be right back.
They say all politics is local, and KUER reporters are here to bring you Utah stories, news that affects you here at home, like public lands and water issues, religion, and the tech boom. You can trust KUER to bring you the facts and thoughtful analysis of why the story matters. Listen to KUER on air at 90.1, stream us at KUER.org, and here's a pro tip, if you've got a smart speaker, tell it you want to listen to NPR, and Alexa or Google will take you right there.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. When it comes to understanding Satanists, there's a good chance you have it wrong. The filmmaker Penny Lane did. She had it wrong. Even as she embarked on this project to tell the story of the birth and the growth of the Satanist movement, her assumptions about them at first were off. I mean, she'd heard about the animal sacrifices, had seen the stuff on TV with, you know, robes and pentagrams and chanting. She didn't actually think they murdered babies, just that they pretended to do outrageous stuff for effect. She thought it was mostly a goof, skeptics and atheists provoking sanctimonious religious and political leaders who keep trying to break down the barrier between church and state. But the more she looked into it, the more surprised she became, she said. And Penny Lane has said that sense of surprise is exactly what she's looking for in a documentary. Her film is called Hail Satan, with a question mark there. It's in the U.S. documentary competition at this year's Sundance Film Festival. So today in the program, we're back in Park City in the studios of community radio station KPCW. Penny Lane is joining us. She's been making nonfiction films for more than a decade. This is her fourth feature-length doc. We've also had her on the program to talk about Our Nixon and Nuts, which won the Special Jury Prize at the 2016 Sundance Film Festival. There are still four screenings of Hail Satan, and we'll give you details about that as we go along. Penny Lane, welcome back. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
I wanted to begin with what I was referring to there in the introduction about the assumptions you had. Like, when you first, like, right off the bat, what did you know right at first about Satanists? Like, what was the thing that came to mind?
Well, you know, I grew up during the satanic panic of the 80s and 90s. And so growing up, I took for granted the fact that there were, in fact, kind of secret underground networks of satanic cults kind of running around abusing children, sacrificing babies, you know, cutting off the heads of goats and leaving them in cemeteries. But because I am who I am, sort of a default skeptical person, yeah. By the time I was in my 20s, I had come to understand that that was literally a hysterical panic, that there were no Satanists doing any of those things, and that if there were people who called themselves Satanists, they were just kind of these silly, you know, kind of goth, cosplay people.
Yeah.
I don't want to be too dismissive.
No,
but,
sure.
But, you know, that there were a few people out there who kind of, like, liked shocking people, and that was it, and that there were no evil people doing any of these things. So I knew that.
Yeah.
And so when the Satanic Temple came on the scene, you know, a few years ago, you know, I sort of saw these amazing headlines and these short news stories about these, you know, cosplay-looking Satanists who were not just shocking Geraldo viewers, but were showing up in places in the United States where the separation of church and state, that wall had been eroded, and were demanding their own rights as Satanists. I assumed I understood what was happening.
Yeah.
I assumed we were looking at something in the style of the Yes Men, people who were essentially pretending to be religious Satanists, you know, kind of to make a point,
yeah.
You know, sort of point out the hypocrisy of
But it was
Christian.
An act.
Yeah, that it was just an act,
yeah.
that they weren't really Satanists, right? Because
yeah.
There are no really Satanists, in
yeah.
my opinion. So then, you know, but what was only, and I already loved them. Like, I loved them based on that. I thought they were terrific, smart, funny.
Activists,
you know,
performance artists,
yes.
All the good stuff.
Loved it. Thought they were brilliant. And that was why I looked into it initially. I mean, I was already interested in a film based on that. But then, you know, meeting Lucian Greaves, reading some of his writing, and then so on, I immediately realized that I had it completely wrong. That they were in fact Satanists, and that I had no idea what Satanism was. And the funny thing about this topic, and this is such an exciting part of releasing the film, is that everybody you ask, if you say, "Do you know what a Satanist is?" they will say yes.
Yeah.
And they will be wrong.
Right.
And they will not care that I am an expert and I am looking them in the face and saying, "Well, actually, that's not what it is." They're like, "Well, it is, but they're a cult." And I'm like, "No, they're not a cult." And they're like, "But they are evil." And I'm like, "No, they're not." And they don't. People really dig in their heels on this one. So I loved that resistance. I loved that confusion. And that was what I thought could make a good feature film, because the journey of the film is really about the viewer. Kind of where you begin in terms of your understanding of the world and the reality that we share, and like where you land at the end, you know?
Yeah. You must have felt a kinship with those people. I mean,
totally.
Yeah.
I do. I mean, I'm not a Satanist. And it's funny because doing press for this film, I've been asked so many times, "Are you a Satanist?" And I say no. And then people are like, "Why?" And I never thought I'd be, you know, in a position where I had to explain why I'm not a Satanist so many times.
Yeah.
You know, but and that's simply because it is a religious identity, and a religious identity is something that has to kind of fit for you in a spiritual way. You know, it's not a hat you put on.
Right.
Now, I believe in their cause and I like their principles and I admire their religion, but I'm not a Satanist.
And you're a skeptic like some of them, but you're not quite there.
I'm not there. And I also just I am okay with offending people. I think there's a huge value in society to being a heretic, to being a skeptic, to standing on the outside and sort of whatever consensus forms, kind of standing to the left of it and saying like, "Oh, but what about this?" There's always another thing to consider here. I've always identified with that point of view since I was very young. I remember in the third grade making a stand about the fact that I thought New Kids in the Block were not good, and that made me a social outcast. So I understood their kind of, I think, their personality types and the kind of emotional burden that they were choosing to take on. It's actually like not all fun and games to be that person. Like, it's actually profoundly isolating and hard to always find yourself in that outsider position. So I understood them, I think, on an emotional level.
Yeah. Let's talk about Lucian Greaves. Describe him. Let's talk about, because he's, of course, probably the main character in the film, or certainly one of them. And talk a little bit about what he's like and who he is. Give us a sense of that.
Well, Lucian Greaves has a trademark smirk that is certainly the first layer of understanding who he is. And I would say actually kind of a smirk is maybe a part of the costume of a Satanist. You know, it's kind of part of the outward appearance. He does enjoy kind of riling people up. At the same time, so I should just say, he is the co-founder and spokesperson of the Satanic Temple, for those who don't know. You know, and at the same time, the thing that struck me about him upon meeting him personally was just how little he wanted this attention. I mean, it sounds crazy, right? Like, how hard is it not to be on Fox News, right? Like, you just don't go on Fox News. But for him, this movement and this, you know, kind of religious revival of Satanism is a calling. In the truest sense of the world, it's not a he doesn't feel like it was a choice. He doesn't want to be famous. He doesn't enjoy being on camera. I can attest to that as someone who had to film with him for 2 years. He hates it. He's terrified that people want to make this movement about him. He doesn't want it to be about him. He understands that there needs to be a spokesperson, and he is a very reluctant kind of spokesperson person.
Well, let me play a moment early on in the film, because the film begins with this kind of staged media stunt in Florida. And what they've done is they decided to get an actor to play the spokesman. Because, as you said, Lucian didn't want to be the face, but then all of a sudden he comes to realize, I don't want just an actor, because this is meaningful. Let me play this moment where he talks about how he wants people to take this seriously.
It became very clear that there was no amount of coaching I could give somebody who wasn't authentically attached to Satanism that would make them a credible interview subject on the topic. When it became my face and my voice, it needed to be everything I believed in and stood by, or it could not be at all. So that's when everything changed.
What does he mean, everything changed? Because there is this shift that happens.
It's a really important moment in the origin story of the Satanic Temple. You know, essentially, they had this brilliant idea about that Satanists could sort of become activists for religious pluralism in a very effective way. And in order to achieve that, they thought they could just have this kind of media stunt kind of, you know, approach where they could hide their faces and be behind the scenes and they could, like, send actors out in the world to pretend to be Satanists. But Lucian, who really was a Satanist and cared a lot about that religious identity, quickly saw that that was not going to work and that someone had to actually, you know, sort of authentically inhabit the role of spokesperson. And that's the moment, really, where the Satanic Temple goes from a funny idea, a prank, a troll, a kind of brilliant media stunt, activist kind of trick, to a genuine religious movement. And that was key in the early of the Satanic Temple, in the early days.
It seems like there's this constant tension there between how much of this is just kind of trolling,
yeah,
goofing on sanctimonious people, and how much of it is these really highly, highly principled people with this deep sense of ethics. It's a really interesting contrast.
It is an interesting contrast. And again, that was part of my attraction because I loved the confusion with that, like the kind of line between sincerity and performing was really deep. And also, you know, I came to see that it's a huge part of every religious identity. I mean, you put on the clothes, you enact the rituals, you say the words, you know, you have the music, you have the theater, you have the pageantry. It's not unique to the Satanists at all in any way, except that it looks weird to us, you know, and it's kind of great that we're sitting in Utah, right? Because, you know, it wasn't that long ago that Mormons were more reviled than really any other religious group in America, literally persecuted. Yeah. So, you know,
believed to have horns.
That's right. And that kind of idea of what it really means to be a religion in modernity is ultimately what the film becomes about.
Yeah.
Even though, again, you think at first it's just kind of a fun goof.
Let me play another moment of Lucian Greaves, because he's looking for, I mean, this gets at the essence of what they're about. They want to provide what he calls a counterbalance to the dominant religious privilege in America. Let me play this. This is Lucian Greaves again, another moment from the film.
What we want to do is force people to evaluate their notions of the United States being a Christian nation. It's not. We're a secular nation. We are supposed to be a democratic, pluralistic nation. We are supposed to be a nation that doesn't allow the government to dictate what is appropriate religious expression.
This is what they're about.
Yes. Yeah. And that's why it has to be Satan. Okay? So people are constantly confused by this. They're like, well, they seem like really nice people. Why don't they just call themselves the nice secular humanists, you know?
And you're like, you know, that is a question that comes up.
It's a good question.
Yeah.
And you have to think about this. If the purpose is to position yourself as the ultimate skeptic, the ultimate symbol of, you know, kind of who is oppressed and reviled and hated and misunderstood, it has to be Satan if we are in the culture we're in. If we weren't in the culture we were in, it would be some other symbol. You know, it could be a pickle jar full of sand. If in that culture a pickle jar full of sand was the most reviled, hated image, then that's what they would be.
Yeah. How does blasphemy fit into it? Because it seems like this is one of the things that Lucian talks about in the film in particular, that, you know, basically Satan, I think this is how he says it, is the symbolic embodiment of the ultimate rebel.
Yeah.
And blasphemy fits into this, it seems.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, in essence, even just to say you're a Satanist is to say something blasphemous. Is that a word?
Blasphemous.
Yeah. So, I mean, blasphemy, again, I understand this in my own experience intuitively, not in a religious context necessarily, but I often find myself in a position within my social world where I am occupying that kind of blaspheming role. And I have to say, I mean, one of my purposes in this film is to celebrate the role of the blasphemer. Like, we need that. That's a really important role. It's not like it's just about being annoying or irritating people. You have to question the consensus view in whatever area you're talking about. You must. There must be someone, and you must honor that role because that is a difficult role. These people put on bulletproof vests in order to stand up in public and fight for freedom for all of us. I mean, they're doing a service for all of us. And all they get back for that is mockery, condescension, hatred, and death threats. And so for me, celebrating that person and elevating them to a kind of, I think, unabashedly heroic role, I think is a really good idea.
That comes through in the film, this idea of the threats, the constant fear, I think, of being, and some of them being exposed, really. I mean, you have to pixelate some faces. Many of them, Lucian is not his real name. Most of them, and I think it's probably for fun, they create these names, but I also think that they are truly worried about being exposed or maybe being hurt or threatened.
Oh, absolutely. All you really have to do is think about your own life. Is there anyone in your family who might be adversely affected if you were a professional Satanist on Fox News? And the answer is probably yes, you know.
Yeah.
So it's really no surprise. I mean, yes, the actual names tend to be quite fun. Some of my favorite Satan names are, you know, Dietrich Von Doom, yeah. Skull Crusher. You know, these are great names. But, you know, the reality of why the names seem necessary isn't just cosplay. You know,
no.
It's also to protect people.
I want to ask you about this, too. The film seems like a critique of the media, how, you know, vacuous and trifling it can be. And one of the Satanists, Nicholas, says early on in the film that once you realize how the media is constructed, he says it can be really easy to manipulate. Talk about that part, because one of the things that we see throughout the film are these dopey local TV news stories about Satanism.
Yeah. And, you know, as much as it's also, so this is where they're kind of like the yes men, right? Like, the Satanic Temple is a very media savvy group. They understand how the media works and they know how to get headlines. And in some ways, actually, the film sets them up in parallel to the Westboro Baptist Church. I mean, if you look at the case of Westboro,
yeah.
How many people at the height of their popularity were actually members? I think like 20 of the Westboro Baptist Church. And yet every single person in this country knows their name because they were so good mm-hmm. at generating headlines and generating outrage. And so I think TST, the Satanic Temple, has really picked up a page from the Westboro playbook, which is, you know, how do you punch above your weight? You know, there aren't that many Satanists, right? I mean, in the film,
although it is growing.
It's growing.
Yeah,
oh, it's for sure.
But still.
But it will never be
no. A
huge thing. I mean, if it ever was, it would sort of obviate the need for its own existence. If Satanism became mainstream, then, you know, then the Christians would be the real heretics, right?
Yeah.
I think that the news media has a lot of fun with the Satanists, and it goes both ways. It's not just to say, like, oh, this dumb media. Like, they're all playing the same game together.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about the kind of emergence of this modern form of Satanism. Lucian says in the film, the Satanic Temple didn't invent modern Satanism. It's been around. And there's this interesting person that you interview in the film, a writer, Jasper Agard Peterson.
Yeah.
Yeah. He wrote the book, The Invention of Satanism. He looks into this, and we see him from time to time sort of explaining how this all begins. Let me play a moment, actually, from the film where he talks about the idea in the original. This emerges, in the late 60s.
The late 60s
right.
In San Francisco.
And so you'll hear a little bit of this TV show going on where the head of the, what was it called in those days?
The Church of Satan.
Church of Satan. They were like the first trolls, right? The intent is to provoke people, as this Jasper Agard Peterson mentions.
The most interesting thing about Satanism is that people willingly choose to identify with an adversarial being.
What are you doing?
I'm giving a blessing to the audience.
I don't think they appreciate it. They were throwing it back.
This is the sign of the horns.
It's a founding aspect of Satanism that you troll people. That's the original troll, isn't it? Just to say to people, yeah, I'm a Satanist, and see what happens to people. I mean, they faint, or they get angry, or whatever happens, and then you move on from there.
So the idea was to provoke.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that it didn't seem to really go anywhere. I mean, this modern version of Satanism is the one that seems to be catching on.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah. The Church of Satan was a phenomenon of the late 60s and early 70s counterculture. And it's important to say the Church of Satan's still around.
Right.
It's a quiet organization. They don't believe in being political.
Yeah.
Like, they don't think that's satanic. They think it's satanic to be an individualist and do your own thing and leave everyone else alone, which is a perfectly legitimate point of view. The Satanic Temple represents what you could call a satanic reformation, where they're taking some of the ideas of Anton LaVey in the Church of Satan, mm-hmm. and they're kind of sticking with some of those ideas, and then they're really changing in a way that is so internally heretical to Satanists,
yeah.
that the Church of Satan and the Satanic Temple are engaged in what you could call a turf war over what Satanism really is, which we could have gotten into in the film, but there were a lot of things to get into
in the
film.
A lot of things to get into the film.
If you want to hear about that, you can just go straight to Twitter and you will find the endless fighting between Church of Satan and Satanic Temple members about what real Satanism is.
Yeah.
You know?
The Satanic Temple. And this is important, and it's not really a spoiler, although I have to say it came as kind of a surprise to me in some ways, and maybe not. They don't actually believe in Satan.
Oh, correct. Yeah, it's important to say
right?
that.
Right? It's
yeah.
kind of really important to say that. They don't actually believe in quote-unquote evil.
No.
So what is it? You
yeah.
know, because you ask this brilliant question later in the film, I guess it is with Jex. You say, do you think most people think you're kidding? Or do you think most people think you're evil?
Mm-hmm.
So just give us a sense of, like, what does it mean, mm-hmm. Satan? I mean, you've already
yeah.
talked a bit about it, but I think mm-hmm. this is interesting. It's like they don't actually believe
right.
in a horned figure in
no.
Hades.
No. So they are essentially anti-supernaturalist.
Yeah.
Like, what they want to do is they want to say, in modernity, in an increasingly secularized kind of rational world, what is religion? What should it be? And what can it be? They want to keep the parts of religion that are, they think, pro-social, the community, the shared sense of purpose, the iconography that helps give our lives meaning, and all that good stuff. And they want to toss out what they think is the trash, the blind faith, the kind of, you know, sort of inevitable slide to fundamentalism, the belief in crazy, supernatural, non-scientifically valid ideas. They want to put all that aside. So they think of Satanism as a very modern, the only kind of possible modern religion, right? Let's take the part, let's acknowledge this is fiction. Let's acknowledge these stories have meaning and are important and valuable, but we don't have to pretend to that there's something called hell literally down there somewhere, you know, or heaven for that matter. So
yeah.
they do not believe in God. They do not believe in Satan as literal, real things. They believe in the value of art and myth and ritual
and reason and
all these things, and they can coexist as a religious identity. And they're not the first or the only non-supernaturalist religion. Most forms of Buddhism are not supernatural in their nature. So the idea of a non-theist religion has existed throughout history. It's just more surprising and unusual in the West, because we have been dominated by this kind of Judeo-Christian world, which does have, you know, these deities
yeah.
that are supposed to be believed in literally.
We come to know some of them, and we see there's a montage in the film. I want to play a section from it, where we see these various people who are explaining why they came to Satanism, what interested them, and in this part of it, a lot of them come from religious backgrounds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're really, they have these experiences. So we're going to hear various Shiva, Honey, Mason Hargett, who's great, by the way. Dietrich von Doom, you mentioned. Michelle Short is here. And Lancifer Longinus, is that the name?
Lancifer Longinus.
Longinus, okay. here it is, another moment from Hail Satan.
I came from a very conservatively religious background.
I was very much a devout Christian growing up. You could almost say a zealot.
I've taught Bible school in our church. I've taught Sunday school in our church. And at the age of 13, I was called to be a deacon.
The day that I graduated confirmation, we're sitting in church and, we're supposed to feel the Holy Spirit come in. And I'm just like, okay.
When I was in sixth grade, we went on a field trip to see the film Gandhi. The next day, our history teacher said, you realize that in spite of all these great things that he did for his countrymen and everything like that, because he wasn't a Christian, he went to hell. And I'm like, really? This guy almost invented the idea of nonviolent protest, but he's not a Christian, so he went to hell. I'm like, is that the moral to this story? Really? I call bullshit.
Yeah. I mean, as someone puts it, they say they want to be the opposite of the religious people that they see around them.
Yeah, exactly. And you imagine, many people can relate to this. You're an adolescent and you're starting to realize that what you're being told contains some contradictions, let's say.
That story doesn't make sense.
Exactly. And wait a minute, that doesn't seem fair, or that's, contradictory or whatever. And everyone can relate to that moment. And then you figure out what to do with that. The Satanists are the type of people who cannot let go of that. They're not going to be like, oh, okay, it doesn't really make sense, but I guess you still say so, so I believe you.
Yeah.
The Satanists are the kind of people that are just like, wait a second, this is not true, and what else could I do with my life? You know what I mean? And many of them don't discover Satanism until a bit later, but that seed is planted in their youth. And it's not always religion. I mean, it could be anything. You know, it could be any kind of sort of mainstream view that, in fact, doesn't make sense to them,
Penny Lane, she directed Hail Satan, which is part of this year's Sundance U.S. documentary competition. It's screening this afternoon and on Saturday in Park City, tomorrow evening in Salt Lake City, and at noon on Friday at the Sundance Resort. You can get details about all of that on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER.
If you're about to part ways with your old car, consider donating it to KUER. We'll take your vehicle in almost any condition, and we'll even arrange to pick it up. The proceeds from your donation support the KUER programs you love, like Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and Radio West. Learn more about our vehicle donation program at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're profiling another film at Sundance this year. It's a documentary by the filmmaker Penny Lane about, wait for it, Satanists. And it's kind of a funny but also moving portrait of this new and growing religious movement committed to challenging the encroachment of religion into the public sphere. It's called Hail Satan, with a question mark. It's in the U.S. documentary competition at the festival. Penny Lane is joining us in the studios of community radio station KPCW in Park City. Let's talk about Jex Blackmore. She's another one of the main characters. Explain who she is and where she fits in this story. She's a fascinating character.
Yeah, she is. She's incredible. Jex Blackmore was one of the early founding members of the Satanic Temple. She was around from the very beginning and was instrumental in helping shape the organization's kind of identity and practices. She forms a chapter in Detroit that becomes one of the biggest and most active chapters in the country. And she's this incredible, radical, feminist kind of, rebel. And she really is someone who really kind of epitomizes who is attracted to Satanism in today,
yeah,
in modernity. So you think about the fact that specifically women and women's bodies and women's sexuality are so controlled by the kind of dominant patriarchal, you know, Christian sort of framework that we've been living under for so long. And she's like, no, you know, so she kind of helps us see that Satanism is, again, not just about kind of trolling evangelicals. It's about liberating ourselves from millennia of these kind of psychological shackles that we live under. So for her, you know, nudity, blasphemy, sex, you know, women being powerful, all that stuff is really an important part of what being a Satanist is.
Yeah. And as we'll get to a little bit later, it's one of the reasons why she starts to kind of bristle at the confines as this organization gets bigger, which is another part of the story.
Absolutely.
But let's talk about her telling of this Adam and Eve story, because it's really important. Set this up for us, if you would. She's another one of the Satanists who probably powerfully influenced by a religious upbringing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Jex Blackmore is really good at explaining kind of the central mythological ideas that are inherent within Christianity and explaining how it could be that you could look at those stories that we all know and say, what if we're getting this all wrong? What if Satan was actually the hero of these stories?
The story of Adam and Eve is the story of Eve's original sin. Eve was very curious, as her nature was as a woman. The devil appeared in the form of a snake and offers the fruit of enlightenment. We are taught to fear that, but at the same time, it seems the most liberating, because if we did not have that opportunity, we would have to be in total servitude without free choice. And ultimate servitude is slavery. Reframing it in the light of it being salvation is probably one of the greatest tricks ever played on humankind.
It's the perfect description, I think, for that. And it's the perfect story for telling where she's coming from.
It is, you know, because you think about all the elements of this story. You've got sort of nudity as shame. You've got knowledge as sin, and all these things that for someone like me who grew up completely outside of a religious context, I've always been very puzzled by that story. Like, I'm obviously not getting what it is that I'm supposed to be getting out of it, because I've always felt like, wouldn't the tree of knowledge be good to eat from? And, you know, kind of, why would being nude be bad? You know, so all these things that I've never understood completely made sense to me when it's reframed as, you know, Satan's actually the hero of this story.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Ten Commandments, how that comes into play in this story. I mean, one of the real victories for the Satanists early on in this movement is that they managed to get a Ten Commandments monument in Oklahoma removed.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about the Ten Commandments, where this fits, because this is that is another kind of counter symbol to this story, it seems like.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, there are often people in the government who would like to put monuments to the Ten Commandments on state property, outside the courthouse or, you know, outside the state capitol, et cetera. Something that we really, most of us, take for granted as being kind of like normal, like whatever, Ten Commandments, you know. And you look at it and you think about what it actually is. It's a government institution saying, here's a religious monument that we think is worth putting on public property. And they will say, this is religious freedom, you know. We get to express ourselves in America, and that's true. But what you can't do is have a government body put a Christian monument on public property and then say, well, we're only going to allow Christians to express themselves religiously. That is in contravention of the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. So the Satanic Temple shows up. And, I mean, lots of people had been complaining about this,
yeah,
right? It's not like
atheists,
you know, atheists were
years,
complaining.
Yeah.
No
ACLU.
One really cared. You know, yeah, sort of like ignore, you know, whatever. Shut up, these dumb atheists.
Right.
You know, an atheist would come along and say, like, well, we want to put up an atheist bench. And this was, like, always their thing. And I always thought that was so stupid. I'm like, atheists, I love you, but a bench. I mean, really? Anyway, so the Satanic Temple comes in and says, great, if you're going to have this, like, you know, 10-foot monument in bronze to the Ten Commandments, we'd also like to have our 10-foot monument in bronze to Satanism on the same government property. And that would be true religious liberty, true religious freedom, true secular kind of openness to all faiths.
And it's a statue. It's a goat with angel wings who has Iggy Pop's torso and little children looking admiringly. I mean, it's all out there, this
it's
statue.
It's really something to see. It's beautiful, and it's very frightening to a lot of people, and it's something.
Yeah. The story of the Ten Commandments that you tell is really fascinating, and there's a moment I want to play where you're talking about how the Ten Commandments on state property, how it shows up, where everyone takes it for, as you said, takes it for granted. You know, you go someplace and you see it often in these places, state, you know, public property. That was a trend that kind of started around the time of the movie, The Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
And there's this conversation. I love it because you sort of interrupt this guy. Who are you talking to, by the way?
He's a professor of law named Jay Wexler.
Jay Wexler. You're talking to him about the Ten Commandments. Here's another moment from the film.
There are a lot of Ten Commandments monuments of the same exact sort in many places all over the United States, which were put up around the same time because they were distributed by Paramount Pictures in connection with the Ten Commandments movie.
Wait, what? Paramount Pictures?
Yeah, the story is that Cecil B. DeMille was involved in making these Ten Commandments in connection with the film and then donating them to governments around the country, and that's the story.
To promote a movie?
It's connected to the promotion of a movie.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was a little surprising. I mean, that was genuinely one of the most surprising moments of any of my interviews because, you know, I've been working on this movie for a year and there are all these Ten Commandments monuments all around the country. And I had noticed that many of them had the same design, but I didn't think much about that. And then to discover that these monuments that are being treated so seriously and reverently as if they were like, you know, as old as like civilization were in fact designed by Paramount Pictures to promote a movie in the 1950s. You know, so the idea of that just it really blew my mind. And I thought it was just so ironic in a sense because, you know, the Christian evangelicals who hate the Satanic Temple are just like, they just want attention. It's all just a publicity stunt. And I'm like, the monuments were literally a publicity stunt. Like that just kind of blew my mind.
Well, you also talk about in the film that this idea about the United States being a Christian nation is kind of an invention that comes from the 1950s, and it's really fascinating. You talk to this Princeton history professor, Kevin Cruz, who talks about how Billy Graham starts, basically, it's part of a sermon, how communism is from Satan.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Americans are freaked out because of, you know, nuclear war, the possibility of nuclear bombs and those kinds of things. And so God starts to really come into American culture during that time.
Yeah, and it's just to be careful with this. Of course, you know, Christianity has been a very huge part of American culture from the founding.
Yeah.
So it's not to say like all of a sudden we figured out we were Christians, but there's a huge difference between saying we are a Christian nation as a matter of description, like because most people are Christian, and we are a Christian nation as a matter of policy. And that's really the change, you know. So it's one thing, you know, before the 1950s and Dwight Eisenhower and his relationship with Billy Graham and the evangelical community, it was very unusual for U.S. sitting presidents and the highest members of government to expressly try to put God and Christianity into policy at the highest levels. And that's what really shifts in the 1950s.
Professor Cruz talks about how it becomes an important part of how Americans think they are. They start to think directly connected to, and in some ways it kind of seems like it makes sense if you're really worried about this red menace and if it in fact comes from Satan and if in fact there's an actual physical threat with a bomb,
yeah.
You can see why people would be terrified.
Absolutely. And also you think about what makes this nation special? What brings us together? What are the values that bind us together as neighbors? And for some people, that is Christian values. And I don't even want to say that as if it's necessarily a bad thing, but there it is, you know. And for other people, it might be, I don't know, the Constitution. You know, and it's very important that people see that those two things are contradictory and that we've been living with that contradiction from the founding, and the Satanic Temple is intent on forcing us to explore the contradiction at the heart of this country. Do we want to be a Christian nation? Do we want to do what Iran did in 1979? If so, let's make that choice consciously, because that's what many people are trying to do right now in this country.
Lucian Greaves, Penny, says that you can't really fully understand the Satanic Temple and what motivates them if you don't understand the so-called Satanic Panic of the 80s and 90s. Talk a little bit about what was going on here, because this was one of the things that absolutely motivated Lucian.
Absolutely. Lucian is around my age. He's around 40. So as many of us experienced in the 80s and 90s, there was this very widespread kind of witch hunt attacking so-called Satanists all around the country. And it's easy to laugh at today because it seems so silly. I mean, how could anyone have believed any of this stuff? And you watch Geraldo and laugh. But in fact, many hundreds of people, maybe thousands of people, had their lives destroyed by this witch hunt. I mean, it actually kind of puts the Salem witch trials to shame in certain ways. And unlike the Salem witch trials, there was never any sense of a public apology. There was never any sense that, like, you know what, let's look at ourselves as a country and figure out what we did wrong and perhaps make amends. It just kind of disappeared down the memory hole because it was so stupid and embarrassing. So now we just don't talk about it anymore. So for him and for many members of the Satanic Temple, coming to the idea of Satanism is inextricably linked with a skeptical stance toward what people say, you know, sort of what the mainstream idea of what evil is and what it looks like in our country. For them, the witch hunt is what was evil.
Yeah.
You know, not the Satanists. Yeah. I mean, they weren't doing anything bad. They were playing Dungeons and Dragons, as one of my subjects says.
Yeah.
You know, meanwhile, you've got this kind of idea that they're running around doing all these antisocial evil things, and that witch hunt is what is evil to the Satanists.
And it ruined people's lives.
Yeah, it really did. And there are still people in prison. I mean, this topic deserves a lot more attention. And I frankly wish we could have done more in the film with it. But as you know, we had to do a lot in this film.
Yeah. You mentioned something that Lucian had said, was that in the Salem witch trials, the actual Salem witch trials, there was introspection after.
Yes.
There was one judge apologized.
Yes.
And people really thought about, wait a minute, what did we do? How did we let it get to this point? Mm-hmm. And that's not that hasn't happened in this one. There wasn't any looking back. As you
right.
said, people just sort of moved on from it. And it seems like for Lucian and others, that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, it's one of the many goals they have. And it's really to force people again to confront some very deeply held misconceptions. And they have so many. It's such a long list, you know. I mean, my film goes through this insanely long list
yeah.
of very deeply held misconceptions that they believe are not just benign. I mean, they think these are dangerous misconceptions.
It's so interesting, too, that you have this incredibly diverse group of rebels and skeptics who are not joiners, really.
Right, not at all.
Right? They resist structure. They resist central authority.
They hate groups.
They hate groups, and yet they're part of one. And
yeah.
they feel strongly about being part of one and probably feel a little guilty about being part of one. And then they start to get big, you know, it starts to grow a bit. We start to see, as you document in the film, chapters in different states and then in different countries. And now all of a sudden, they're legit. And the question comes up, what's that going to do with the really underground nature of the organization?
Yeah, it's huge. And I knew from the beginning this was going to be a part of the story, because there's no way you can have a satanic organization that's not going to have a lot of contradictions. You know, they want to be totally outside of all structures of authority, but they also, like, have an organization that has to have oversight and leadership and rules.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's going to cause some tensions.
Well, it's interesting because Jex, as we referred to earlier, she starts to bristle against all of that. And
yeah.
Talk a little bit about this. I don't want to necessarily give too much away about this part of the story, but she's starting to feel constrained by it, because her sense of what Satanism is and the spectacle of activism is really out there.
Yes.
And she doesn't want to be confined by rules.
She is really a brilliant artist. I mean, that's the first thing I would say about her. She understands the value of imagery and words and, kind of performance art to shock and provoke and inspire and do all this great stuff. And so she increasingly wants to continue to kind of radically shock people in a world where the Satanic Temple has to be concerned with its public image because they're doing really important work that could be threatened by, you know, radical action that's too extreme.
Yeah.
So as bizarre as it sounds, you know, this satanic organization like has to be kind of conservative.
Yeah.
You know, so Jex is not a conservative person. Jex is the ultimate rebel.
Yep.
She's now the ultimate rebel within the organization, you know, and so that's kind of the role that she plays in the story.
And it raises, I think for me, it raised questions about the effectiveness of some of this spectacle,
mm-hmm.
Which some of it is, as Jex talks about, there's, as you said, nudity and sex and just some rituals that could be seen as disturbing to some people. And it's performance art, but it's also activism. And it did make me wonder, and I'm wondering what you think about how effective it can be. At what point you go a little bit too far?
Yeah.
Because I'm sure the Satanists think about that, even though they started by provoking, by blaspheming.
Yeah. I think the main thing to keep in mind is that Satanism is not just about, you know, trolling. It is not just about what other people think about what you're doing. I would say mostly it's about yourself. You mean, this is your religion. You know, it's about what the effect of those images is on you. Jex wants to liberate people from the bonds of superstitious kind of oppression. So, you know, for her, her main goal is not about what you think about it. It's about how she's feeling and how the people in the religion feel about the imagery. So, you know, you have to always kind of keep that two sides of the coin in your mind. You know, most of their ritual practice is not for you. It's for them.
Yeah.
We filmed it.
Yep.
And now we're sharing it with you, so, you know, it's a bit more confrontational. But the rituals that Jex does in our film are primarily private. I mean, they're for Satanists.
Yeah.
You know, so they don't care if you're offended
yeah.
by it.
Yeah.
The point is not really to offend you. The point is for them to express themselves in a religious context.
One of the things you've talked about is that you think some skeptical atheists are going to be forced to, this is how you put it, rethink their knee-jerk negative response to religion.
Yeah, I'm putting myself in that category.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah. Because it comes back to something you were mentioning before, and a number of the people, Stu Dahan, one of the Satanists in the film and a sort of legal expert for the Satanic Temple, talks about, he says, being an atheist is boring
mm-hmm.
because what they have is they have community and they have iconography and mm-hmm. they have rituals and they have a history. And that's kind of a religion.
Yeah. I mean, when I think about being an atheist, I tend to think, and I've been an atheist my whole life, it's just a negative identity. It's just saying, like, I'm going to clear away some of these cobwebs in my mind. But it doesn't replace that with anything. I mean, what's left? I mean, you know, I guess for me, heading into my middle age, what this film did for me was actually force a crisis of my own faith, in a sense.
Wow.
My kind of anti-religion, like, default stance. Like, the world would be better if religion just went away, which is what many atheists think. I mean, this is kind of like the Richard Dawkins kind of view, right, that's so prevalent in the atheist community that I think is starting to dissipate. Because we are tribal creatures. We seek meaning. We see communion. We need it. It is not going anywhere. So religion is the answer to that. It doesn't need to be a list of beliefs that you either believe or don't believe. Religion is a thing you do. It's a thing you do with other people.
Yeah.
And I am amazed to have this revelation about religion in my film about Satanism. It was not what I was expecting. But to leave this film with a newfound respect for what religion is in the lives of people is, it's really powerful for me. And I hope that for many viewers who walk in kind of expecting to sort of poke fun at religion and think this is basically kind of a flying spaghetti monster sort of joke, I hope that they'll feel a bit of that change for themselves.
Let me ask you this finally. We've talked to you about some of your other work, Our Nixon and Nuts. And in none of those films did you actually have to go out and shoot any film, right?
So excellent observation.
Right? Or go out and do interviews or any of the other stuff. So did you like this particular brand of documentary filmmaking? Because
yeah.
It was a departure for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it was. It's a funny departure because I've been making documentaries for so long.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like documentary 101 for everyone else. So how do you make a documentary? You get a camera and you go out into the world.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't know. I've never done this before. I loved it. I mean, I think, you know, again, getting back to the sense of community and finding fellowship, I tend to be pretty isolated. I tend to spend most of my time alone at home. Like the Satanist, you know, and then getting out in the world and meeting people with whom I had some sense of mutual respect and love and common cause was really good for me. So while I did not land as a Satanist, I did, you know, sort of rediscover my desire to connect with human beings. And this process was a really good way to do that.
Penny Lane, she's the director of Hail Satan, part of the U.S. documentary competition at the Sundance Film Festival this year. It's screening this afternoon and Saturday in Park City. It's screening tomorrow night at 6:45 at the Broadway in Salt Lake City. So if you're in town, you can go see that if you can get tickets. There's also a noon screening on Friday at the Sundance Mountain Resort. And all of the details about all of that are on our website, radiowest.org. Penny Ling, thank you very much.
Thank you. This was fun.
Radio West is a production of KUER News. Our thanks to KPCW in Park City, where we're recording our Sundance coverage. The program is produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.